prepare yourselves for Ethan and Aaron's Confessions of a Movie Snob, the ongoing discussion of
my favorite movies from 2000 to 2010.
Ladies and gentlemen, trees and multiforms, welcome to a podcast where Ethan and I are going to digest the film of the aughts, of the noughties, as they are called. We've decided that we are going to just take a look. I think this is going to be the first in an ongoing series where we are going to just look at our favorite movies from certain decades, the 70s, 80s, 90s, and tonight we are looking at 2000 through 2010. Obviously, if I am Aaron, that makes that giggly voicey over there, Ethan. Say hello, sir.
Hello. It is nice to be back.
It is not
semi-conscious this time.
Semi-conscious, yeah. Last couple of times we've done this, it's been pretty late. No, we're not using Audacity. What do you think we are, idiots? I'm responding to the wall, but it's okay. So yeah, that's gonna be our show tonight. We're gonna talk a little bit about it once we get moving on here.
We should probably mention that we are broadcasting right now.
Well, I mentioned it on Facebook, but yeah, we are live. This is all going out over the intertubes, over the internets. It's something I want to do. Excuse me?
We're going old school on this.
Old school. Yeah, I'm getting all old school at the podcast again. It's kind of weird. I'm enthusiastic about it again. I look forward to it. I care what it sounds like. It's pretty weird.
It's all that methamphetamine.
It's all those methamphetamines that I'm shooting into my eyeballs.
Yeah. Exactly.
But, Ethan.
Well, you're getting all geared up because you shaved your head and now you look like the guy from Breaking Bad.
So. That guy from Breaking Bad, Walter motherfucking White. Get it straight, motherfucker.
All right, I will once I actually see the show.
Watch this show, man. It's awesome. But before we actually start talking about these movies, do we have any geekly happenings? Because I do, but I didn't bother with any music, so we're just going to do it.
Excellent. No, I don't have any geekly happenings.
So. Well, I have three geekly happenings, one of which is old, one of which is relatively new, and one of which is kind of in betweenish, but definitely relevant to this podcast. I'm going to open up with the old one. As you guys know, Ethan and I are fans of the awards circuit. We like the Oscars. Mm-hmm. We like the Golden Globes. We like all that kind of stuff. And I'm actually just going to kind of merge this news into a singular. We do know who is hosting the Oscars, and we know who is hosting the Golden Globes. A few weeks ago, it was announced that Family Guy runner, voice actor, director of Ted, Seth MacFarlane, is going to be hosting the Oscars. Personally, I like it. What I said when I heard it was that it's neat that he's hosting the Oscars, but I would actually rather him direct and produce because he does the good old the old time song and dance big show stopper thingy bobber. So that's a good thing. You don't really particularly care one way or the other about Family Guy. Am I correct, Ethan?
No, but I really like American Dad.
You do like American Dad? Did you see Ted?
I love American Dad. Did I see what?
Ted?
No, I haven't seen Ted yet. It's one I really want to see. I just haven't had a chance to.
I like Ted. I definitely like Ted.
Yeah, I know. You said it was really funny. Everyone who I talked to who saw it said it was hilarious. So.
It was a pretty damn funny movie. And I'm not gonna say it has a Coen Brothers feel because it doesn't have a Coen Brothers feel, but there's no way you would make it through it without realizing it's a Seth MacFarlane project.
Right.
But moving on to the next part of this. This is one that you might have a little bit more to say about it. We know who the Golden Globe hosts are. Have you seen this, Ethan? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I saw some little snippet about it, that it's Tina Fey and the actress from a show that I've gotten really into lately, Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm. Amy Poehler.
Amy Poehler, yeah.
Awesome. You know, I've been watching the Golden Globes. I don't really watch the Golden Globes too much, but I watched last year and the year before because of Ricky Gervais, and because he's a pretty damn good host, and he's kind of awesome. But Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, I'm watching the fucking Golden Globes this year. Those are some funny people, and I'm looking forward to it. That'll be cool. I imagine, because you said you were recently now getting into Parks and Rec, and you can kind of see my
I'm with you on wanting to grow up to be Ron Swanson.
Yeah, if I ever grow up, I would kind of like to be Ron Swanson.
Yes, totally.
He's pretty cool. See, other than that, what else do we have? Let me take a sip of water while I think about it.
Okay.
I know what it is. It is the Confessions of a Movie Snob-centric news. We have a release date for the home media of The Dark Knight Rises, DVD, Blu-ray, digital, and that kind of stuff, and it's December 3rd. So everybody knows what to send me for my Christmas, right? Yeah, don't send me that because I'm going to buy that December 3rd. So, looking forward to it. Loved the movie. I'm looking forward to the home release. Haven't really looked into the special features too much. I know there was always there's been kind of some stuff going along where everyone's all like, there's a director's cut coming out, and it is 75 hours long. And I'm like, yeah. And they released it. It's like, no, you idiots. You saw the director's cut in the theater because what's his nuts?
He has final cut.
Yeah, he has final cut. But I'm still looking forward to it. It's an excellent movie. And I'll be happy to watch it at home on my, on my nice TV, in my underwear, and doing all that kinds of good stuff.
Oh yeah.
So that'll be.
When you do that in the theaters, you just got funny books.
Uh huh. Yeah. Well, I mean, I did, but they can fuck off because you know what? I got the Walter White head. Everybody knows that you can't do the Walter White head without running around in just your tidy whities. So they can fuck right the hell off, as far as I'm concerned.
It's part of the whole ensemble.
It is part of the whole ensemble. Ethan, do you have any other news you want to talk about at all?
No, I don't.
You don't. So, do you want to just get moving right on into this to our main topic and talk about these movies?
I'm up for it. Yeah,
Do you like movies? Well, it's an ongoing thing lately, but we had shows fall through. First, we had Ruth Oz and or Hitchcock fall through again. It's getting really suspenseful and thrilling about this Hitchcock show and when it's actually going to happen.
Exactly.
And it's going to be kind
of... It'll probably happen when Hitchcock actually comes out.
Yeah. At this point. Saw the trailer. Looks pretty damn good. And it looks like Anthony Hopkins ensured himself an Oscar nomination. So, That's pretty awesome.
It was probably going to get a makeup nomination, too.
And then Ethan had a brilliant idea of talking MacGuffins. And then I decided that I wanted to complicate Ethan's brilliant idea and say we need John Rogers on that show. So we reached out to John Rogers. He says I'd love to do it, but I can't this week. So we stuck that MF-er on the burner. And we're gonna do that at some point in the future. We still have that show coming up with Jess about the science and the movies. We're not gonna run out of topics. Ethan and I just declared the other day that we'll stop doing this when one of us dies. So we like podcasting. So in order to come up with something, I went to my tried and true. Why don't we just do our top six favorite movies again? And Ethan's all like, "What the fuck?" And then one of us,
I said, "Do you really want me to hear me talk about the Seven Samurai again?"
Uh huh.
20 minutes.
Yeah. And then I think it was you that ended up coming up with, or maybe I came up with the idea to where why don't we do our favorite movies of 2000 through 2010? And
I think you said let's do movies after 2000, and I narrowed it down and said let's just do decades.
And this has become, I mean, I know it's part of the show we talk about how hard of a time that we've had making the list, but it's actually really especially relevant today for me because I am the classics movie guy. I love my Charlie Chaplin, my William Holden, silent movies, film noir, all that kind of stuff. And I'm taking a decade that ended 2 years ago. And what's really funny is if we were doing 2000 to the present, easy. Number one, The Artist. No question in my mind. Cutting off those last 2 years, I no longer have access to The Artist.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I was sitting here making this list, and I was going through years, and there were some years in the 2000s there where just some bunch of crap came out.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean...
And, it's like some decent movies here and there, but nothing that I was like, I'm not putting that on a list, because really. And it really was, I was sort of starting to think back through movies going... Well, no, wait, that came out last year. Oh, wait, no, wait, that came out the year before. Okay, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, yeah. So it was definitely challenging coming up with the movies on this list. And I think what we're aiming for right now, actually, is if we're going to make this an ongoing sort of a series thing, is it's going to be relatively easy for me first up and difficult for you, and then by the time we're done with it, it's going to be flipped.
Yeah.
So.
Well, see, I had zero problem pop... do you remember how when we did our favorite movie line show, I decided I wanted to complicate shit I wanted to complicate it for me, and I decided I wanted to, you know, I didn't want any on the AFI Top 100, and I wanted stuff I say every day, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And, yeah, I decided to do that again because when it came down to it, there's going to be some movies on this list that we've talked about. There's going to be some movies that I've talked about a lot, but I love some of these movies, and so I'm just going to have to try to find something new to say about them.
I definitely tailored my list expecting some movies to show up on yours.
You know,
and I also tailored it with things saying, you know, I've talked about this movie a lot, so I'm going to push this sort of on the back burner and maybe talk some other stuff, you know.
My thing about it is, are you still there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My thing about it is that, you know, no offense, but I didn't take you into consideration at all because sure. I have two themes running throughout this list. Number one is honesty, because I'm not going to put a movie at number one just because I've talked about, you know, an inferior movie at number one because of the fact that I've talked about it before, a one that I like better and before. But the other thing is going to be, there's going to be some reconciliation on here, to tell you the truth. There's some movies that have come up on the show that I didn't give the praise that they deserve. And there's also going to be, I don't know, there's going to be an awful lot of stuff coming up. Looking at the movies of the decade of 2000 to 2010, basically three things jump out at me. It was a huge decade for CGI. I mean, it was, you know, obviously, because, you know, it's a recent decade, and it's a, you know, that's just, you know, technology. There was also some revivals. There were some revivals of genres that, you know, hadn't been doing too well, like musicals, like like sword and sandal epics, like, you know, just, you know, old-time movies. If I had to put something on here, I would and to say, you know, like a main film from this decade, it would have to be probably fantasy, and that's because of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Huh.
I would agree, and I think this has been a huge decade for comic book movies.
Yeah.
I mean, that really goes without saying if just sit back and think about it, but I mean, it was huge. I mean, we got the decade before that, we had, you know, maybe 5-10 comic book movies total, and then now we have, you know, double that, and they're actually good, you know.
Mm.
And it's sort of really, and that comes from, I think you hit the nail on the head with CGI, basically coming full circle and being so easy to put into a movie, and so actually beyond that, where it wasn't so cost prohibitive to have something look realistic in CGI.
Right.
Now you can actually do it, and heck, TV shows do it nowadays. You know, TV shows have effects on it that rival, you know, Jurassic Park did 20 years ago.
Well, right. You know, like the first ever CGI scene was that pan shot in Wrath of Khan, right? And if I remember right, it cost $3 million. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think, 10 seconds. And, you know, now I could do that on my computer. So, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's just what happens when we, you know, when movies get updated a little bit and things like that. So, honestly, Ethan, I want to get moving on this because I'm excited. I mean, there's some movies on here I really want to talk about. So, let's crack this bitch open. What's your number six favorite movie from this time period?
Okay, my number six favorite movie. Now, I didn't write down any of the years, so, but these are all came out between 2000 and the end of 2009.
Uh-huh.
My number six is definitely one of your favorites, and it is one from a director that for me sort of came out with a great movie or came out with a movie that I didn't like, then came out with an awesome movie, and then sort of putzed around for a while and did some other things, did some decent ones, did some ones that I was okay with, and did one that I wasn't too fond of. It's Inglourious Basterds, Quentin Tarantino.
Excellent movie. Love that movie.
And, you know, I've sort of explained my thing with the Kill Bill movies and saying, you know, I like them, but they were built up a bit and you know, they just weren't, you know, awesome. They weren't this, you know, I didn't come out of those theaters just going, that was an amazing experience. I loved it. It was fantastic. And that's probably the reason I didn't see Inglourious Basterds, because I expected, well, it's just Tarantino, and I'm not, and he's just gonna let me down again. And luckily, you convinced me that, you know, that it was really good, and I needed to see it, and so I did, and it was phenomenal. You know, you had great writing, you had a great, you know, great great cast, And it's just a great story. And you had Tarantino doing what he does best, which is what he wants, you know. And, I mean, spoiler alert, you know, I mean, they kill fucking Hitler.
Yeah.
Come on. That enough sold that movie for me. Because up until that point, and that's near the end of the damn movie, obviously. But up until that point, I was like, yeah, this is pretty good. I'm enjoying this. It's a good, you know, Tarantino war movie. And holy crap, they killed Hitler.
Yeah.
That is awesome. And where some people would go, would step away from that and go, wait, you know, that's not how it happened. This is, you know, it's the same people that, you know, get upset because they changed the bat symbol on the bat costume or something, you know. Or they, you know, the people that got upset that Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character was Robin.
Yeah.
To me, it was enough of it showed the Tarantino's love of those movies and his sort of wink to you going, come on, I've got you already. You know you want it to happen. So you know what? No one else has had the balls to do it. I'm just going to do it and kill Hitler.
And, you know, I love that movie.
And I just love that part in that movie. I mean, it's just a great moment in that where it's just purely cinema, purely a movie thing where you just go, you know what, you're right, this is great escapism, and who cares if that's not what happened? You know, who cares about historical accuracy? Let's just have fun.
Mm.
And that's what that movie meant to me, and it ended up at number 6 on my list, and I love it. It's great.
Yep. You know I love that movie. I've been listening to a lot of our older shows lately. I just, for some reason, I'm all about the podcast lately. it's kind of fun to listen to me twist your arm into watching that movie and then realizing that I was right.
Yes.
So that was kind of awesome. I'm glad you liked it. I'm really glad you liked it.
Fantastic. It's I was ecstatic to find it on fairly cheap on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I bought it the day it came out. I didn't care if it was cheap. I liked it so much. Okay, getting into my number 6. My number 6 is one that I have talked about a lot. This is going to be the only one that I'm going to try to keep it a little bit short on, but it is, you know, it's, well, 2004. And I'm pulled up on Rotten Tomatoes right now, 91% tomato and audience. It's Shaun of the Dead. Everybody knows I love that movie. Everybody knows Ethan loves that movie. It showed up on our zombie list. It showed up a lot. I think it showed up on your genre benders. Mm-hmm. My thing about this movie is I want to pretend that, let's say Ethan and I weren't Ethan and I, and we were weird-ass roommates like we were like 10 years ago. I think that Shaun of the Dead is kind of what our reaction to it would be. We're not going to be reacting like they did in Hot Fuzz and putting on the bandoliers and the guns and the stuff. We're going to go after the weird girl in the garden with the you know, with the cricket mallet and throwing our record, well, it'd probably be your Laserdisc collection at them. and you know, we'll have red on us. It's a movie I love to watch. It's one of those that I can throw up I can throw up on my DVD player and it will be, and it'll make me happy. You know, it's, you know, it's a almost perfect movie to me. I love it. It's easily my number 6 of this decade.
Well, and it's easily my number 5, actually.
Shit.
And you know, for me, it was coming down, looking through this list, and you know, I had Hot Fuzz on here, and I think Hot Fuzz is more of a movie for me. It is more a movie that I love, but I think I needed to put Shaun of the Dead on here over Hot Fuzz, in that Shaun of the Dead is what, you know, brought us Simon Pegg, it brought us Nick Frost, and it brought us Edgar Wright, and those guys are so talented and so just, they're so funny and so witty, and they're just the next generation of filmmakers, and they come out with this absolutely great movie, and I was a huge zombie movie fan, and I thought Shaun of the Dead was absolutely side-splitting hilarious. Because it was a smart comedy, and you know how much I love those. I love movies that don't think you're stupid.
Yeah,
exactly, you know, it's not all about raunch or being gross or anything like that. This was actually a smart movie, and you know, had some feeling to it. And you know, I was like, you know, maybe these zombie movies aren't so crappy. And you know, now I've gone and back and watched a lot of these other zombie movies, and I see what Shaun of the Dead was emulating, what they were giving an homage to, and. That's why I had to end up at my number 5. It's easily one of my top movies of the last decade, right there, number 5.
Yeah, it's a wonderful movie. I love it. Obviously, I stuck it at my number 6. Mm-hmm. So excellent.
So we're down to your number 5 now.
Down to my number five. In the intro, we started talking a little bit about, you know, my aim. Part of it was honesty, and part of that honesty would be bringing up Shaun of the Dead, even though we've talked it to death. The other part is reconciliation. This movie, 2007, it's a movie that I actually used to hate. I recently rewatched it, and I realized I hated it because of my ex-wife. And honestly, Ethan, I don't really want to hear anything bad about it. It meant too much to me. It is the Julie Taymor film Across the Universe. I watched it. I don't remember when it was, but I just watched it because, you know, I knew I had a bad day the first time that I saw it. And I just wanted to watch it again because I know that your mood and stuff can affect the fact that, you know, whether how much you like it. Now, it's a movie based off of, you know, a group of kids growing up in the turbulent 60s and stuff like that. But it's all set to the Beatles song. They say in the Tarantino movies, you're either a Beatles man or you're an Elvis man. I almost hate admitting it, but I'm a Beatles man. Watching this movie a second time, I often talk about important movie-going, movie-viewing experiences in my life. And this is probably one of the top five or six movie viewing experiences in my life. Just watching that movie, they just got it. This was a movie made by Beatles music lovers for Beatles music lovers. They take these songs that are part of pop culture, that are part of, you know, the fabric of society, and they set it to these characters, and a lot of the times they exceed what they meant out with the songs. And we are talking about the fucking Beatles. This isn't goddamn Mamma Mia. You know, this is the Beatles, and they are able to breathe life into some of these most, you know, songs that we know so much about, these things that are, you know, part of our lives, and they breathe life into it. This is a movie that it was all about the love of the project for me. And I got up and I locked the door when I watched this movie because I didn't want to hear a goddamn thing from anybody. I wanted to watch this movie. I wanted to experience it. And I just loved it. For whatever reason, I could not stand it the first time I saw it. Second time, I adored it. It was just, it was a wonderful thing. I'm going to sell shit if I have to get this on Blu-ray because I enjoyed watching it so much. So, yeah, my number five, 2007, Across the Universe.
Excellent. I actually haven't seen it, but I'll also tell you, I'm not a Beatles man. I'm also not an Elvis man, so...
You're a Queens man.
I'm a Queen man, yeah. I have nothing against Across the Universe. I'm familiar with it. I know of it. I've just never seen it. So,
here's my thing about it. And, you know, I often throw you under the bus for, you know, for your jumping on bandwagons and shit about, like, you know, Star Wars or Harry Potter. I was part of that bandwagon, too, with Across the Universe, where people would say shit like, well, the only reason the main character's name is Jude is so they can sing Hey Jude. Or the only reason why they're holding their hands is so they can sing, you know, I Want to Hold Your Hand. It's like, motherfucker, that is the point. You know, this is something that is, I mean, it's supposed
to... Point of any musical made to existing music.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, I mean, it was spellbinding. I loved watching it, and I think I'm as enthusiastic about it as I am because I didn't like it very much at all, and I switched on it so much, so I had to get it on this list because I needed that reconciliation, and honestly, I needed that honesty too. So number five, Across the Universe. Ethan, number four. Cool.
All right, well, getting into my number four is getting into familiar territory for me. I just looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got a 76% critic rating, 85% audience rating. And you know he had to show up on here at some point. It's really Scott's Black Hawk Down.
Not on my list. Forgot about it. It's a pretty good movie.
This is one of those movies that I honestly would have ranked, you know, would have gone in and ranked Gladiator probably as one of my favorite Ridley Scott movies, but this is a movie that has steadily grown on me with subsequent viewings. When I first saw it, I said, that was really good. I liked it. And then I watched it again. I was like, you know, that was better than I thought it was. I really, really liked it. And then I saw it a third time, and I really, really, really liked it. And now it's to the point where I own the I don't have it on Blu-ray yet because the Blu-ray doesn't have any of the extra goodies on it that the big 3-disc set had, sadly, and I just haven't gotten around to picking up the Blu-ray. Given what this movie is, a modern war movie, and just the cast that's in it and just how it's done by Ridley Scott, it's hard to sort of put my finger on it why I like this movie. You know, it's one of those movies that, hey, it's a good movie that Eric Bana's actually in, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone and their brother is in this one. And the fact that it's something that happened in my lifetime, you know, and that I wasn't really aware of when I was a kid. And then, you know, now I was aware that it was happening, but I wasn't aware that it was happening, you know. And this is one of those movies that really does a good job of putting the military in a very realistic light and not trying to make any big statement about it. The military is bad, military is good, or anything like that. It's just about these guys in this situation. And so it made it to my number four.
It's a movie I like, Ethan. It's a movie I like. I've seen it. I have no real problem with it, but I can't put it on a list like this. I think the Ridley Scott's done better movies, and I think he's done better movies this decade. And it's nothing against it. I mean, a good Ridley Scott movie is a good Ridley Scott movie. Mm. But yeah, it's a good one. I do like it. It's just not anywhere near my list. Just not anywhere near my list.
Excellent.
So, I guess at this point we're moving on to my number four. Am I correct?
Number four. Yes.
Okay. I don't know if this is reconciliation or whatever we're going to call it, but I do remember back in the day when we talked about our how to make a scary movie, I was trying to act all macho and shit and say, well, I don't know how to make a scary movie because I can't think of anything that scares me. And then I saw a movie in 2007, and I saw it again, and it dawned on me what it was that really scared me. And the thing that scares me is, it's domestic religious extremism. It's There Will Be Blood, the Paul Thomas Anderson movie, you know, starring a wonderful and Oscar-winning performance by Daniel Day-Lewis. It's a story of a oil prospector, starting rags, moving his way up to riches, building a little oil drilling reserve around like this crazy religious cult, and having to kind of bend over backwards to be allowed to drill for oil there. And then there's the extreme crazy if you've seen Looper, the guy that played his idiot friend let his loop go. He's the guy that plays the crazy religious extremist guy in it. And it just goes to terrifying, terrifying lengths in this movie. And boy, is it a good title. Is that the correct title? There Will Be Blood. There Was Blood. A lot of ways, it was a terrifying movie. It is, I almost want to call it Daniel Day-Lewis's best performance, and that is a tall order, but it is such a good movie. I loved this movie, and I also feel bad for never talking about it on this show again, before, because I just adore this movie. So, my number four is 2007, There Will Be Blood.
Excellent. Well, I've never seen it, actually. It's just one I've been meaning to watch and just haven't done it yet, so very cool, very cool. It looks awesome, and I want to see it at some point.
You should. It's a good one. Honestly, you're not going to like it as much as me. You're not as scared of crazy religious people as I am. You're not as big of a Daniel Day-Lewis fan as I am. But I could see you walking away from it thinking it's a pretty good movie.
Cool.
So it's my number four. Moving on to your number three.
All right, moving on to my number three. And I think we may have talked about this movie once or twice on the show, but I don't think we've really ever gone hugely in-depth into it. We're into my number three. My number three is got a 67% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes, 97% critic rating. It's the 2004 Incredibles.
Good movie. Once again, not on my list, but yeah, good movie. Excellent movie.
And this is probably also because, I haven't seen the last several Pixar movies. So, I still haven't seen Up. I still haven't seen Wall-E or anything like that. So judging by what you have said about Up would probably be on the list. But Incredibles is sort of the best Pixar movie that I've seen, at least. And it has this great element in this movie. I remember watching it sort of when Elastigirl is sneaking into the enemy fortress, and I just had this sort of realization that this segment was basically a big homage to James Bond villains from the 1960s and 70s. with the little monorail and the henchmen running around. And I was like, okay, I get it. And the fact also that it's a superhero story that, you know, is very, very tongue-in-cheek, but also very respectful of superheroes, means it was pretty much crafted for a person like myself to watch. And I'm definitely wanting to see another one someday. I know they keep saying they're going to do another one, but, you know, we'll see what happens whenever they do. But it's my number three.
And you met Violet last week.
And I did meet Violet last week,
yeah. Once again, excellent movie. Didn't make my list, but, you know, don't let that take away from it. I think if I were going to be throwing a Pixar movie on here, it'd likely be Up. But, you know, like you said, you haven't seen it, so.
Yeah.
So that's something. I'm just making sure that I'm still recording over here. So, I guess at this point we're moving on to my number three. My number three is one that surprises me because it's a movie that it surprises me only because of how low it is on my list, because it's not like my number one or number two or something like that. But it is the 2007 Ethan and Joel Coen No Country for Old Men. I'm very surprised it's only my number three because when I remessed around with my top five list, I ended up putting it in there on my top five list. But I love it. I like watching it. I watched it again last night. We've talked an awful lot about it on this show. We talked about it with Christopher on our Supernatural show, and it came up on our Coen Brothers show, and it's just all around a excellent movie. I watched it last night. We're not gonna get into it without Christopher here, but, you know, after rewatching it and listening to that show recently, I just don't agree with it. I just don't agree with them. I mean, it's a wonderful movie.
Supernatural take on it.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not going to. I just don't agree with it. But it's fine. I mean, you know, different people see things differently. So my number three. I adore this movie. I'm sure you knew it was going to pop up on my list.
I did, and it actually is the number two on my list.
There you go.
And this was one that surprised me, you know, and really this movie surprised me back when we did our Coen Brothers show, in that I was ranking things and that it ended up as my number one on there.
No, it didn't. Your number one on our Coen Brothers show was Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, where it surprised you was when it showed up on your favorite Best Picture winners.
Oh, that's right. That's right. My bad.
Damn, I know my shit. But yeah, no, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and basically that was sort of a wake-up call for me going, you know what, that was a really, really fucking good movie. And, you know, looking back and making this list up, I'm like, I can't not put it on here because it's just one of those movies that sort of sneaks up on you. It really is one of those that comes out once every decade, obviously, that is just so perfect in the way it does things. It has great characters. It has this great compelling story. It has great scene transitions. Yes,
actually, it did.
Yeah, it did. But it's also, you know, arguably this absolutely fantastic crime story. And I would really have to agree with you on the whole McG thing. We love McG.
Yeah.
But I watch it, I see nothing super.
I see nihilism. You know, I see the cold reality of life.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, it's funny. I was watching it last night, and I don't know if it's the first time I've made the connection, but it really reminded me of an old John Ford Western, especially mm-hmm. with the sweeping panoramic shots and stuff like that. I mean, no, I love this movie. I mean, I've gone on about it, but boy,
you can really see why they went on to do True Grit. You know, and saying, looking at this, is it was sort of a modern type of a Western, because it really was this sort of this epic showdown. And you know, there's that Hollywood sensibility in there as you're watching it going, well, you know, your hero, quote unquote, here is Josh Brolin, and he's going to win, but then he doesn't, you know. Mm-hmm. And whereas in some movies, that's a huge letdown. In this one, you're like, oh, crap.
Mm-hmm.
That means this Anton Sugar guy is walking around
just kind of getting away with it.
Yeah, and he's getting away. And then at the end of the movie you have that scene where he gets hit by the car.
Yeah.
And there's that whole business and you know, some people don't get why that scene is there, because really the movie ends about 5 minutes before that.
Mm.
But it's like,
no, it's not. I mean, it's once again, I think it's coming down to the fact that I think it's just coming down to the fact that it's showing, you know, like no country for old men, meaning shit is changing, you know, shit isn't fair, shit isn't, you know, black and white anymore. It's showing that this awful guy is getting away with awful stuff.
Yeah. And from what I mean, though, is that they could have ended that movie 5 minutes before that.
Master filmmakers like them would never do that.
Well, I know. I know this. You know this.
Yeah.
But some of our listeners don't know this.
Well.
And you have this this fight. It goes on a bit longer, so showing you, and it really showed me that there is not a happy ending here. You're not watching this to see the bad guy get his comeuppance. This is just what happens, and it really is that you know true. It's that no country for old men.
Yeah.
It's just right in there. And you know, Tommy Lee Jones and him don't have an epic showdown, you know, and the old timer doesn't.
They don't even meet.
They don't even meet. Yeah. It's there's no confrontation there. And it's a great movie. I mean, it absolutely is a fantastic movie.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah. It's my number two.
Very good. Did you see your number three yet?
Yeah, my number three is Incredibles.
Ah, right. So we're back down to my number two. It's funny how sometimes shows get away from us, and we have an accidental throughway. I swear this is not the Let's Piss on Christopher show, but this is my major reconciliation of my list. I am picking a movie that ended up popping up on his worst, you know, we hate these movies list, and I actually kind of loved it, and I should have said something then, but I didn't, and I'm probably, and thinking back on it, I bet you Ethan was wondering why the hell I didn't speak up. I went with the 2001 Baz Luhrmann Moulin Rouge. I adore that movie. I loved that movie when it came out. I think we've talked about it on the show just how enthusiastic I was about it. Once again, it was another one of those important, you know, movie watching experiences of my life. I love musicals. This is such a charming movie, and I've heard people say before that, you know, that they don't get it. Why the fuck is there, you know, Queen music or Madonna music or Nirvana music in a movie set in, you know, turn of the century France? Well, it's because the movie is about, it's about love. It's about that newness. It's about that excitement of love. And you're not going to get that with 125-year-old music. You have to put in stuff that really evokes a reaction out of your audience, and I think that Baz Luhrmann was very smart and, you know, handpicking these songs instead of trying to write them, because the guy is obviously not a musician, but, you know, he knew that like Roxanne would work really well in the scene that he used, or the fact that to show the debauchery, the wonderment of the Moulin Rouge when Christian first shows up to play fucking Nirvana music. It's a movie. Obviously, I mean you'd have to be a moron to miss it, but it's a movie about love, because you know love, 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 love. You know, that's what all they say through it. But I mean, it's a project of love. It's a movie of love. It's just it's a movie that I absolutely adore, and it was a movie that was important to my ex-wife and I. But I moved past that. I never really shit on this movie too much. I probably avoided it for a year or something like that. But I still adore it. So I have to put it on my number two, because I had to defend it, because I loved this movie. And you know damn well that I love this movie.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And I was resistant to that movie for the longest time. Did not want to watch it. Just did not care. Just wasn't into it. And sort of like with you and with Across the Universe, I have that movie has some sort of bad memories associated
sure.
with it, with an ex.
She who must not be named.
Yes, but I've gotten over that.
And, yeah.
I haven't watched that movie in a while. I do own it on Blu-ray, and it's one of those movies that sort of came around that made me realize that, oh wait, I don't hate musicals. Mm. And yeah, it's a good choice. It's a good movie. I'm not the hugest Baz Luhrmann fan. I'm not going to lie.
I wouldn't call myself a huge Baz Luhrmann fan, but I liked this.
Yeah, and that's pretty much where I can say it. It's like, I like this.
I liked the Romeo and Juliet movie, okay. Australia kind of sucked, but hey, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, but, you know, this one, it was clever, it was fun, and I remember you being very expecting me to really hate it once I saw it, especially because they used Queen music in
yeah.
it. And I I fondly remember the movie quite well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, so Moulin Rouge is my number two. Your number two was No Country?
No Country for Old Men.
And so I guess we're down to our number ones. What's your number one favorite movie from this time period, Ethan?
You know, I talked a bit about it last week, and so this is a movie that just sort of, I guess, you know, looking back, it sort of has snuck up on me over the last several years as being as high on my list as it is, obviously, at number one. And I don't really realize how much I love it, but it's a movie that's, you know, firmly entrenched in the stuff that I like, and that's you know, good science fiction. It's the 2009 District 9.
Really?
Yes.
I haven't seen it since last week, so I've still seen it twice. I did really like it though. It's a good movie.
I guess for me it's kind of hard to put my finger on it, but what I really like about it, and what I like about movies, and especially sci-fi movies, is normally in a science fiction movie, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's a big, you know, action movie, or it's a big, it's you know, a movie that's got tons of explosions. It doesn't have much of a plot to it. It's science fiction, just so they can put some special effects in there and sort of, you know, get eye candy in there. But this movie, sort of, when it came out, it came out in at the very end of the summer, I think, in 2009.
Yeah,
in there, and I did not see it in theaters because. You know, I was like, yeah, it doesn't look like this big, you know, they sort of made it out to be this action movie. And I managed to see it when it came out on DVD. And it is just one of those movies that you watch it and you just, I sort of akin it to when I first saw Boys Don't Cry.
Mm.
At the end of it, you just wanted to turn in your membership card to the human race.
Yeah.
And this movie does what science fiction really, I think, can do best, and that's make a great commentary on something, but also do it in an entertaining way. Yes, it's an entertaining movie, but there's a great story in there, that there's a great subject in there that you really can take a lot from, and you could sit there and analyze it. And I think this is a movie that could be analyzed in a film class very effectively. It could be analyzed in a sociology course. I mean, it's
sure.
It's a really fascinating look at how people treat others. And it's not even, you know, to discount the whole, oh, well, there are aliens in it. It's like, well, it's how people treat people who are others who are different, you know. And as I said last week, Wickus is such a fantastic character in that. In most movies, you have these characters that are pretty much the same at the beginning as they are at the end. Yes, they've gone through an arc or a story or
heck,
or,
they've gone, you know, through heck.
They've gone through hell and come out the other side, but they're still essentially the same character they were at the beginning. But this character in this movie is diametrically different from when he started, both physically, obviously, and mentally and spiritually. And I think that really makes the movie great. And that's sort of the reason I chose this one over the other big science fiction one, Children of Men.
It's a good one.
In that this one you have a much more visible and a much more emotional change in the character and the way that the movie was done in sort of this mock documentary style, and then it just seamlessly transfers itself from that to an actual movie. And it just is one of my favorites. Obviously, it's my number one. It's a movie that I'm glad that they that funding and stuff fell apart for a Halo movie, because
yep.
That's how we got this movie. And
yep.
I think it's one of those great accidents. And I'm remiss because I haven't seen this movie in a while, and I've got it on Blu-ray. I just haven't watched it in a while.
Sounds to me like you should watch it again because you seem to really like it.
But it's my number one. I know, and I was surprised it ended up there. Looking through the list, and but I just couldn't put it anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, well, excellent. I'm not going to add to that, Ethan, because, like I said, I've seen it twice, and it sounds like you did it really well. I do know that I liked it quite a bit. Like I said it last week, it's definitely more than your dumb standard sci-fi action movie, and that means a lot to me. I guess now at this point we're moving on to my number one. This is the one that gave me the most confliction. This is the one that, you know, that really put me on this honesty path. This is a movie that I've talked about a lot on this show, and actually we've talked about it on this show. It's 2009 Quentin Tarantino Inglourious Bastards. Mm-hmm. I have to disagree with you on a lot of shit you said about it, Ethan. Quentin Tarantino is a master filmmaker. He does no wrong. The Kill Bill movies were incredible. You just let somebody destroy them for you. And I can see how, and I know the person who did it, and I understand how it happened. Jackie Brown was a perfect movie. Back when we revisited our directors, I ended up putting Quentin Tarantino as my number two and Christopher Nolan as my number one, basically as penance, because I didn't put Christopher Nolan on the first time through. But at the end of the day, Quentin Tarantino is without a doubt my favorite filmmaker. I will see whatever the fuck the guy makes. You know, I know Christopher Nolan is working on a Howard Hughes biopic pretty soon, and that's not something that I'm gonna probably see in the theater. I will see anything that Quentin Tarantino makes. Inglourious Basterds, to me, it is everything that you said about it, but more so. I mean, it is about, yeah, okay, the Nazis didn't, you know, they did get away with a lot of awful shit. You know, they didn't kill Hitler and Goring and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it's even more fun because of the fact that it's a remake, and so you just don't see the ending coming. I kind of see the movie as a whole bunch of different stuff. I see it, obviously, as a filmmaker at the top of his game. You know, Tarantino just, you know, knowing the right people to cast, knowing the right movie tropes to use in a certain scene. Like, you know, how cool is it when they use the old the Grindhouse text logo to say Sergeant Hugo Stiglitz, and have that, you know, that wonderful Samuel L. Jackson voiceover pop in there. How fucking weird is it that he puts Mike Myers in it as a character who's, you know, 25 years older and a different ethnicity than him, but it worked. And I also think that, you know, maybe I'm reaching way too far with this, but I think a lot of it has to do with healing. You know, the World War II is, you know, it's a blight on our modern society. I mean, it's obviously one of the worst things that's happened in a lot of our, and a lot of our elders, you know, memories. But, you know, we have to move past it. You know, there were heroes, there were villains on both sides. Nazis fucking sucked, but a lot of them were just doing their job. I hate saying that. I'm not being a Nazi sympathizer. I'm trying to be a humanist here. You know, I fucking hate Nazis. I hate what they did. I hated the Final Solution. But when it comes down to it, you know, this is a movie showing that, you know, these were people. You know, a lot of the times, you know, be it Schindler's List, be it, The Pianist, be it any number of these World War II Holocaust movies, you know, it's black and white. You know, the Allies are the good guys and the Nazis are the bad guys. And I don't mean it in the sense that, you know, maybe one, but what I'm saying here is they were human. They made mistakes. And, you know, it's time to start moving past that. It's time to start healing. And we can watch a movie where, you know, what we really wanted to happen, and, you know, pump our fist at the screen as the giant head gets her revenge, you know, with the death of Hitler, with the death of Goring, with the death of fucking, the first ever best actor winner, what the fuck is his name? Emil Jannings. There's just so much wonderful stuff going on in this movie. I love this movie. I love the performance that we got by Brad Pitt. I thought it was a horribly underrated performance. Obviously, yeah. Christoph Waltz won an Oscar for it, rightfully so.
He kind of stole, you know, he was what everybody talked about.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
He was so excellent.
I get what you're saying with that.
It's just an absolutely wonderful movie. I probably watch it monthly. And I've talked about it a lot on this show, but I'm not going to not put it at my number one because of that. I love this movie. This is a movie that that means too much to me to say that I like you know, There Will Be Blood more because I've talked about it less. So no, my number one favorite movie from 2000 to 2010 is easily Inglourious Basterds. So that's my piece on it. Anything to add, Ethan?
No, you know, I said my 2 cents on it, and by no
means, I said my $50 on it. Apparently,
you did, and you know, no one should ever take away from it that I don't like it. I think really with Inglourious Basterds was a bit of a wake up call to me, saying, you know, just as I came around with the whole Star Wars bit, and I came around with things like that, that you know, this is one of those that made me sort of go back and look and go, okay, wait, you know, maybe I've you know, I wasn't getting what Tarantino was about, and now I sort of look back and go, you know what, I get it now, and it makes me willing to go back and watch those movies and watch the movies that I was sort of lackluster about, and maybe watch Jackie Brown again and give it another chance, you know, I mean, you know, Outside Forces and whatnot, but you know, Inglourious Basterds, great movie, I love that movie,
easily my favorite movie of the past decade, and I, you know, and I'm not even saying I'm not going to be apologetic about it, because I don't need to be, but my point is I talk about it as much as I do because of how much I love it, and so I tried to say something new about it this time, but it's my favorite movie of the past 10, well, the, you know, the, this decade that we're talking about, the Naughties, as it's so called. The Knots. Why don't we do our rundowns and stick a fork in this?
Sounds good. Well, my number 10 is The Dark Knight. My number 9 is Children of Men. Number 8 is Gladiator. Number 7 is Casino Royale. Number 6 was Inglourious Basterds. Number 5 was Shaun of the Dead. Number 4, Black Hawk Down. Number 3, The Incredibles. Number 2, No Country for Old Men. And my number 1 movie was District 9.
Very, very good. I would have to throw an honorable mention in here because I completely forgot about Casino Royale, but we'll call that an honorable mention. I love that movie. But my list that I actually have in my paw is my number 10. It's the movie that you knew was going to pop up on here. It's going to be the one that I'm not going to make any arguments for, but I just love it. It's Scott Pilgrim versus the World. My number 9 is, you know, another staple of this decade. It's the decade that brought us the Harry Potter movies. I went with my favorite. I went with Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Number 8 is actually the 2010 Inception. Once again, a Christopher Nolan movie that I love. And then we get down to my number 7 is another Christopher Nolan movie that I love. It's Batman Begins. Of course it's going to be on this list. Then we get into the list that I just yelled and screamed about for a while. Number 6, Shaun of the Dead. Number 5, Across the Universe. Number 4, There Will Be Blood. Number 3, No Country for Old Men. Number 2 is Moulin Rouge. And my number 1 favorite movie from 2000 to 2010 was Inglourious Basterds by Quentin Tarantino. Woo! That was passion, dude.
Yes.
That was passion. That was an awful lot of fun. It's a good decade. You know, it's kind of a good time to be alive when it comes to movies, because you know, we kind of get some awesome ones. So yeah,
that's what happens when we do a show and we're awake.
Yeah, that's what happens when we do a show. Like when I did that one show with Jess, I think I did it at midnight when we did that other show with Jess. I think it was like 10, but you know, now it's like what, 8, and so you know, I got all kinds of energy and stuff. But yeah, next week, I still don't know what's happening. It might be Ruthon's, it may be Hitchcock, it may be MacGuffin's, but it's definitely going to be a show for definite. So, we got all that going. We have all that going on. Do you have anything to add before we go?
I think I'm tapped out as far as, adding to this, I think.
Well, okay. Well, how about this? This kind of felt like an old school show because we talked about a lot of stuff. So why don't we go a little bit old school with our outro? I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
Let your geek flag fly. Red's Phone Zone music.